You're listening to The Art of Healing on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Kara Hetland. In this segment, we'll explore how writing can heal. We'll start with this poem by Christine Stewart.
Confession. Sister, you didn't know I pretended to snore in my strawberry shortcake sleeping bag as you yelled at Mom across the room. She hissed, "Why do you do this to me?" You couldn't see yourself stumbling up the sidewalk in your nurse's uniform, bottle in hand. You reached for me. I turned away. Beer lessens stress, you said. Whenever you made Mom cry, I bit my lip, wished the worst. How could I have known when I woke to your unmade bed and crossed myself to make the prayer official? As the hum of your car's engine pulled Mom to the garage door, as I wished for you to die, you already had. And that there's a prompt in a book that said, write your deepest secret. And this is, again, an example of healing and the way art, my theory, this example is an example of it. So I wrote down that I prayed my sister to die. I prayed for her to die.
Christine Stewart is an associate professor of English at South Dakota State University. She has several published works of poetry, including the compilation book, Keeping Them Alive.
Keeping Them Alive, it braids two narratives, one of my sister's death and one of my son's birth, and they're in opposite directions. So the narrative of my sister's death starts out with her death, and then goes backward in time, kind of goes backward in how I'm remembering that and mourning that. And then the other narrative, it starts out with conception, and you don't see the baby born until, you know, towards the end of the book. And I did that on purpose to kind of create a tension in the narrative arc of the book.
Stewart's sister died in 1984. Her body was found in her car parked in the garage with the engine running. Christine Stewart says she has written many poems and essays and short stories about her own personal experiences as a way to grieve, to heal, and to honor her losses. She has had several miscarriages, and writing about the birth of her son helped her.
Actually, one of the poems in Keeping Them Alive, Spot, was one of the, it's a threatened miscarriage. When I was pregnant with my son, I spotted, and I thought that I was going to have a miscarriage, and that's what that poem is about. And I thought that only women would really get that poem. And one of my friends, who is a writer and happens to be a man, said that was my favorite poem in that book because it really persuaded me to feel something that I would never have been able to feel before and get into the mind of someone who is scared by that. So I can read that. Spot. 234 periods trained me to feel my cyclical shift, to count down before I welcomed the warm mark. Sometimes it's soft ache, inconvenient. Sometimes a Thanksgiving. I never thought its absence a safe sign, never added days of lack for peace of mind, until 10 weeks pregnant, a spot. Blush of terror. What color? Asked the hotline nurse. Like wine? Like Christmas? Lighter? Almost pink? I decided, like bricks. Then relax. A cramp. Read your body, a book advised. Every 5 minutes, I slid down my underwear to gauge betrayal's shade. So that one was threatened. That wasn't real. So that, but I wanted that moment. I wanted to capture that moment of feeling, that complicated feeling of what's happening and is this what I think it could be?
But it was.
It wasn't that time. It wasn't that time. And interestingly, I think that's what's kind of strange about my life is that pregnancy was perfect except for that moment. You know, and then I had four others that I lost.
Stewart acknowledges the topics of death and miscarriage might be uncomfortable to some. She writes for not only herself to heal, but also for others who read her words to find comfort and to know they're not alone.
A lot of art is generated from places of healing and moments of healing, and that writing in particular is important to healing processes for a lot of people because it's the first chance someone gets to narrate their own story of whatever trauma or whatever experience caused them pain or caused them suffering. And that is one of the most important things for me, is to be able to name and narrate my own stories of pain and suffering.
Stuart says having that act of narration witnessed by someone else is therapeutic. Her son is now 7 years old and at the age of 4 was diagnosed with a rare form of epilepsy.
His Landau-Kleffner syndrome, his expressive and his receptive language skills are impacted by this. And so he experiences the world as if everyone's speaking a foreign language and he understands bits and pieces of it.
She says she's not able to write poetry about her son's condition. Instead, she's writing essays as a way to cope.
For me, although I'm still in it, so I really can't say it's healed. But it gives me metaphors and ways to describe him to other people. It gives me a language. It gives me a lot of time to reflect and think of the right language and the right narrative.
Stuart says journaling about her son is not art. But she says in a few years, she may be able to go back and hone her words into art.
Writing is a small sort of act towards immortality.
Patrick Hicks is a writer in residence at Augustana College.
We naturally gravitate towards words to heal us. I mean, words can heal us.
Hicks wrote a poem for this project called The Words.
The words. They can stitch up wounds as easily as slit the skin. Words can chip away the bricks that are built up in our heads. Words are born by breathing in the air around us, letting the present fill up our lungs. They are the quivering voice box and the twitching tongue. Listen. Words travel from my mouth into a hive of electronic circuitry where they are stored in a honeycomb of wiring. And then, miracle of miracles, this past recording of my voice, what you hear now, travels out from a loudspeaker and taps against the drum of your inner ear. The Morse code of my words enters the empire of your skull like a flaring electrical storm. For a moment, the space between you and I is overwritten, collapsed. We are in unison, in spite of it all. This is what the words can do. When strung together in a sentence, they become a warm jewel or a flinty arrowhead. Words can wound us. Words can heal us. They are a balm of illuminated kindness. They can say, I love you, I miss you, and why did you abandon me? Best of all, words can pull us together and resurrect the dead. When I think of those missing from my life, when I see their faces in my daydreams, I also hear their voices. Listen now. Can you hear the beloved dead of your own life whispering to you? It's okay, they say. I'm still with you, they say. Think of me, and I am alive in your head. Words are what people remember of us. Words can travel beyond the grave. Words can offer healing to the future, and they can bind the centuries together. Beautiful words are inside you right now. All you have to do is open your mouth and let them go.
For Patrick Hicks, writing is a part of his physical and mental well-being. It's something he has to do every day. He says it can reveal what's really going on in his mind.
Things will appear on the page that I had no idea I was even wrestling with or trying to understand. And it's not until the moment that I see it on the page that I realize that it was even something that was kicking around in my imagination.
Hicks held a series of workshops at the VA hospital in Sioux Falls. The idea was to help veterans returning from war heal through writing. But instead of young men and women returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, he was surprised to find the writers turned out to be Vietnam veterans.
Because I was at times a fly on the wall when they were talking about what it was like to come home. And I remember very vividly in one of the sessions that I did a few weeks ago that I just said nothing as they all talked about coming home and what that experience was like, especially at that point in time in our nation's history. And it was, you could tell that the wounds are still there. And although it happened many decades ago, it didn't, not in that room. It happened just yesterday.
Hicks says for that group, writing doesn't have to be about their experiences in war.
As a writing coach, if you will, is to just help other people see the stories that they're living every day. But everyone thinks that their lives are not interesting to other people. Well, I don't believe that for a second. I think that we all lead these incredible lives, and I think it's just how you tell the story will make the story interesting or not interesting. So often I feel like my job is to try to find the core of what makes that person interesting and then help them sort of nudge them along to shine a spotlight on that.
One veteran stood out in Hicks' spotlight. But before Kip Sorley would agree to a taped interview, a few promises were made, like not talking about his time in Vietnam. Sorley is a published cowboy poet. He's won numerous awards for his writing, but he is shy and humble and quick to give credit to others. He doesn't like crowds or stop signs.
Or streetlights, and I prefer being rural. I get nervous when I get around cities.
He has shaggy brown hair dusted with gray lining the underside of his cowboy hat. His mustache grows past his mouth and hides his teeth. Sorley wears Wrangler jeans and a Western shirt. His hands are worn with hard work and experiences, but his eyes sparkle with kindness.
And I started late trying to be a rancher. You know, I was 40 years old when I started doing that, and I should have grown up doing it. You know, it would have helped.
Instead, Kip Sorley grew up on Drummond Island in northern Lake Huron. He traveled to the mainland in Michigan to attend school. He served 2.5 years in Vietnam and then started his ranch at the base of the Cabinet Mountains in western Montana, where he says he made a lot of mistakes at first.
We had a small head of Hereford cattle, which went through a really bad winter, and I lost all my calves. And I don't like losing calves.
Remember that line, he doesn't like losing calves. When asked to read a cowboy poem, the conversation shifts and his pledge to avoid talking about Vietnam is broken.
I like to be called a cowboy poet, but I do veteran poetry. And it's probably more special to me than being considered a cowboy. You know, at best I'm a half a cowboy, but I'm all a veteran.
He takes out a sheet of paper from his satchel and shares a poem that describes a place in western South Dakota that's special to him, the Black Hills National Cemetery. He wrote this poem sitting in a park across the highway.
It's called Exit 34. The Black Hills monuments are known across our land, but not too far away are other stones that stand. Near its northern border, the treed Black Hills descend into rolling grassland. Its gentle slopes extend. Too few who travel by will visit or explore the markers on the lawn at Exit 34. The rows and rows of stones stand proudly to defend the honor of the spirits lost to both kin and friend. In green grass or in snow, they sparkle in the sun. They speak of wars long fought and some that were not won. The kin they left behind and old friends bound by war know of last full measures at Exit 34. Upon that rolling lawn for everyone to see stand some of the reasons that each of us is free. Those rows of monuments pay tribute to our dead. As you pass, give homage, or maybe stop instead. Sacrifice a moment to those who've given more. The gates are always open at Exit 34. It's a real special place.
Kip Sorley has several poems about Vietnam hidden in his satchel. Not many people have seen them. He's given some to the VA hospital to use with discretion when somebody needs to know they're not alone in how they feel.
I'm not a group person. I have to do it. It's got to be personal. And by putting it into words, if somebody reads those words and it helps them, then I've really done my job.
Sorley says by putting his war experience on paper, it helps him release the weight he's carried around for years.
I've never let out. I mean, even my wife didn't even know I was in the service for almost 20 years.
Kip Sorley says he started writing poems for veterans when he realized he wasn't the only one hurting. He was diagnosed with diabetes and spent time at the VA hospital in Montana.
I met a whole bunch of other veterans that had run away and moved to Montana and live up in the mountains, and who felt the same kind of thoughts that I felt. And it was the first time in my life that I felt that there were other people that felt the same way I did.
Sorley is writing a poem for his family to read after he's gone. It's about 60 pages so far.
It's probably not any good, but it's honest.
He writes all of his poetry longhand with a pen and pad of paper. He says sometimes it takes 100 revisions before he considers it done. Sorley says writing and rhyming words heals his scars.
The scars will still always be there, but I think they won't bleed as much.
Writing about the truth helps him understand and accept his past. Today, he's a cowboy poet, and years ago, he was a soldier.
I think veterans and cowboys have a lot in common.
He just happens to have a poem that combines the two. It's called Calves and Friends. Remember the line earlier that he doesn't like losing calves?
With pencil in his hand, the cowboy sat and thought. Of calves he'd catch and brand, end of a war still fought. But there appeared no word describing now or then. Of bawling calves he heard, of dead and dying men. A cauterizing brand will leave a scar behind, not like the ones unplanned that fester in his mind. The scenes seared into his mind are sharp and clear inside, but words he once lined are words not wrote. They're tried. Spring calves that he finds dead are like the friends he lost, and words are best unsaid that can't convey the cost. His inept pencil's curse he knows will not be cured, and lifeless calves make worse the dreams of war endured. He camps on open range, both miles and years from then. It is a fair exchange for words he cannot pen. His pencil holds a flood of words he will not write, of burning flesh and blood, of friends he sees at night. He does not rant or rave. He holds the hurt within. And calves he cannot save remind him where he's been. If he could just set free the million words not penned, perhaps, if that could be, his dreams would find an end.
Kip Sorley reading his poem, Calves and Friends. I'm Kara Hetland, and you're listening to The Art of Healing on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
To see images or hear related stories, please go to our website at sdpb.org/artofhealing. When we come back, we'll hear how music can heal.